Welcome to Sightseeing Japan, the podcast where we explore the land of piping hot delicacies. I'm Paul Bresson.
And I'm Jason Neeling. Piping hot.
Piping hot.
That's how they're best, you know.
Of course.
If you don't scald the roof of your mouth,
it's not doing it right.
Yeah. It should feel like lava.
Gotta like swirl it around in your mouth while breathing to like not burn yourself.
I actually think I have heard that about takoyaki is like when they set it in your hand, if it's not at a temperature that would burn the roof of your mouth, you shouldn't be eating that takoyaki. That's not good takoyaki.
Yeah, takoyaki's always crazy hot.
Yeah.
Like hot.
You got to wait like 15 minutes before you bite into one of those.
Yeah. Or you will pay the price.
I have paid that price. It's a steep price, but worth it. You know, they're tasty little balls.
Yep.
I didn't expect us to jump right into it here, but we're already talking about takoyaki.
Hey, you brought it up.
Okay, do you want to ramble on about some other unrelated stuff for the intro before we get back to takoyaki?
Well, I did want to mention how excited I am for your birthday party, bro.
Oh, me too.
I'm excited. Yeah. Everyone's going to get over here for the first time all together and get to enjoy all your cool new stuff in your house.
I'm excited to get to use the fire pit for the first time and show everybody disco mode in the basement or
yeah,
whatever we're going to call it. I haven't come up with a name for it. But
your comfy deck chairs.
Yeah.
Bringing out the disc golf basket.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be a good day.
Yeah, it'll be real fun.
That's what I got for life stuff. You got anything?
Well, you know, just house stuff. Haven't seen a pill bug in a while, but now I'm battling the spiders. I told you a little bit about that before we hit record.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting. There are just a lot of spiders. I met my first neighbor yesterday.
Oh, nice.
Or was it the day before? Right next to me on the corner. Nice guy. He has a lot of spiders too, apparently.
Okay. That's the first thing that comes up.
Yeah. A lot of things came up. I don't know. He's been here actually since like the very beginning of the neighborhood. He knows everything about the neighborhood.
Wow. Was that like 40 some years ago?
60 years ago.
Wow. That's cool though.
His stepdad owned the house before him, I think he said.
Oh, okay.
He's got all the deets, you know? Apparently, the hill that my house is on didn't used to be there. They built a hill to put houses on.
Oh.
His house used to be the highest one around.
Okay. Like drainage reasons or something.
I don't know.
Can't get the basement flooded.
I guess. Oh, also, at some point, people were making meth in our garage.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Isn't that cool?
Got some character.
They burned a hole through the ceiling of it, apparently.
At least they didn't blow everything up.
Yeah. I mean, the house survived, apparently.
When I was driving here today, it was beautiful early evening, I saw quite a few of your neighbors out hanging out in their driveways and their yards. I saw one guy stopping to talk to another one of your neighbors, and the one guy looked like so daddish.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was there with his little daughter, and he had on like the cargo shorts, and he had one leg up on the bumper of his car, and he was like stretching forward.
I feel like, yeah, the neighborhood is mostly senior citizens, and the people that aren't senior citizens are pretty momish and daddish from what I've seen.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Well, that's just the demographic of who owns houses right now, I suppose.
That's true. But yeah, it sounds like it's mostly senior citizens.
Okay. Nice quiet neighborhood for you.
Quiet and safe. Yep.
Yeah, they'll report everything.
Yes.
No suspicious people are getting through this neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go on for too long, but I did go to a neighborhood meeting the other day. A bunch of senior citizens getting around to talk about safety and complain about things.
Okay.
That was kind of fun.
You'll fit right in.
Yeah. I met this really nice guy, Merv. He seemed pretty cool.
That sounds like a camping. Senior citizen name.
Yeah. I like it, though. I think Merv is a pretty cool name.
As far as
old names go, Merv is a pretty good one.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
So, well, we're obviously talking about street food today.
Yes, street food is our topic. You can find a lot of street food in Japan, but it's not quite as big of a thing as in a lot of other Asian countries, right, Paul?
You could say that, yeah. I actually was really intrigued because I saw people arguing or making the argument that like street food culture isn't really a thing in Japan.
Sure.
And I was like, well, based on my experiences in Japan, I beg to differ. So I dug into it a bit, and I was like, what's the arguments behind this? And I think the biggest root of it is that, you know, it's impolite to eat and walk in Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's the heart of it, where people are like, oh, there's not a lot of people out eating on the streets. You even hear some people say it's even impolite to stand and eat. I don't know if I really buy that, especially depending on where you are, probably, too.
I think it really does depend on where you are. I think, look, I haven't been to China, haven't been to Korea. I don't know exactly what their street food culture is like, or, you know, other Asian countries. But I think, I mean, in Japan, we've eaten a lot of street food because we go to super touristy places.
True.
And that's where the street food is.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like there's less street food just in random places around the city. And, like I said, haven't been to China, don't know for sure, but I get the impression that there are just more, like, markets that you can kind of walk through in China where there's just tons, like, a huge variety of street food. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I haven't been to China either. But I think the street food always congregates where the people are. You know, it's always going to be in the busy parts.
But there are parts that are busy with tourists and parts that are busy with locals, you know? And I feel like there aren't as many, I don't know, street food areas popular with locals, like, exclusively. I don't know. What was your experience like in Korea? Did you see a lot of street food there? I should have asked your brother about this.
Yeah, I feel like I saw a bit. I remember getting some cinnamon-filled pancakes that I think maybe had chopped walnuts in them, too, that were really, really good. Because I was there in February, and it was cold, and they were hot and delicious.
Nice.
But, you know, I was vegan at that time already, so there was a lot of stuff I probably wasn't really looking very closely at.
Sure.
I remember the rest stops on the highway in Korea being, like, a huge food place. If you take a long bus trip, they always stop at a rest stop, and you get off for 30 minutes, and they've got the sweet potatoes and the corn and the fried chicken and all these little stalls selling all sorts of little quick food bites.
That's cool. Another thing I think of in Korea, I don't know if this qualifies as street food, but it is basically food that you eat on the street. You know those little, like, bars that pop up with, like, it's kind of just a big tent with a little bar or restaurant under it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. In the K-dramas, they're always, like, getting hammered
exactly.
At one of those places.
Oh, dude, I also wanted to mention I watched Solo Leveling. You and I just finished it.
Oh, dude, it's great, isn't it?
It's really great, yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes place in Korea, and they were eating in one of those exact things that I'm talking about.
Yeah, and that's, like, I'd say that is street food, but it's, like, almost becoming a restaurant with the big tent and everything.
A little bit, but it does really remind me of the Yatai in Fukuoka, which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. Like, you know, they definitely, people call that street food in Fukuoka, but it's like you're not just standing there on the street eating it. Like, you're kind of sitting at a little bar under a tent kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it also blurs the line in Japan. Like, do you call konbini food street food?
If you, like, buy it and then stand out front and eat it?
Right, right. Like, it's quick, easy food that you might eat right away. Like, sure. That could definitely be street food under the right circumstance.
Yeah. I guess. I was going to ask, have you ever been... I mean, no one's ever scolded you for eating food while you're walking or standing or outside or whatever, right?
No.
I have a little story.
Oh, yeah?
When I was in Matsuyama.
Okay, it was like one of those tourist streets. It was a shopping street. And I found a little dagashiya, like one of those stores selling old traditional candies. And I got some of my favorite candies. And then just, you know, on the other side of the shopping street, there was this, it was like at the end of the shopping street. So I'm kind of like outside the shopping street, okay? But there's this little bench in front of this shop. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just sit there and munch on a couple of these little candies that I got. A lady came out of the shop and with a very stern, borderline upset look on her face, told me, like, you can't eat here. And I felt very shamed and embarrassed. And I packed up my stuff and I said my sumimasen
sure.
and whatnot.
Wow.
And walked away.
That sounds
awful.
With
my tail between my legs.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I feel like that could have been as much of, like, she just doesn't want people loitering, even though she put a bench there.
I guess.
Like, she doesn't want people buying food and then coming to her place. Go eat that where you bought it kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like if you eat it standing in front of the place you bought it, like, I see that a lot. Like Japanese people do that all the time.
And I think that's an expectation a lot of the time is that you buy your street food and then you stand there right in front of the place, you eat it, and a lot of time they'll have a little trash can there. One of the rare times you'll actually see a trash can in Japan.
Yeah.
Just so you can throw your stick or wrapper or whatever in there.
And sometimes, annoyingly to me, the trash can will be like behind the counter and you kind of have to like go back and hand your trash to them to get them to throw it away.
Yeah. I remember when we were in Inuyama, this might have been me playing the gaijin card a little bit, but I like handed him a can from the vending machine that I had emptied too. And I was like, do you mind taking this?
I think I remember that. And I was thinking like the gall of Jason to give him trash he didn't get at this store.
But that street had so many vending machines and not a single recycling bin for the cans.
I remember that. Yeah.
That
was kind of annoying.
Yeah. But I guess I get it. Like busy tourist street. They don't want to have to empty those cans all the time.
Yeah. I will say that I have made an effort to not eat and walk in Japan. Like, I haven't done that very much at all because I know it's kind of taboo. Although I have kind of crossed the line, I do sometimes, if I'm sitting waiting for a train, I might sneak a few bites of like a bar or something I've got, which you're not really supposed to eat in the train station. But no one's ever really called me on it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, when I see people online talking about this, people bring up, oh, you're not supposed to eat and walk. And then other people will be like, I live in Japan and I see Japanese people eating and walking sometimes. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, but people are going to do rude things, even if they're considered rude.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But yeah, it's generally not that big of a deal. And I don't eat on the trains. That's a big no-no. I will not eat on a train.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Unless it's, you know, one of the trains with full dining trays where you're
it's a Shinkansen where you're supposed to eat lunch.
Yeah, it's mostly just the Shinkansen or limited express ones.
So food culture, or the street food culture, I should say, is really tied to Matsuri in Japan, right? That's where you're going to find a lot of it, is at the festivals.
That's one place where you're like guaranteed to find street food.
Yeah, there'll be all these little stalls all over the place. But like you said, tourist places. If you go visit a castle or a busy shopping street, you might find some food stalls to get some tasty stuff.
Sure. I mean, we got a whole list at the end of the episode. We're going to talk about the various places that you can go to find street food if you want to seek it out.
Speaking of lists, we also have a list of a bunch of different street foods we're going to talk about. And I got a question for you, Jason. You came up with a really nice list, I got to say. Did you do this just sitting there thinking of all the tasty things you've eaten over the years? Or did you like go out and find some stuff that you haven't tried yet?
You know, I put together a list of stuff that I have enjoyed, and then I Googled around to find some stuff that I'm now very interested in enjoying.
Okay. Okay. I'm curious which ones you haven't tried yet. So you have to let me know as we go which ones you haven't tried.
Oh, I'll be sure to share some personal experiences in this one.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Paul, you want to talk about some balls?
Yeah, I always want to talk about balls.
Like I said, they're hot. Hot balls, octopus balls, or takoyaki. Now, Paul, when you first heard about takoyaki, or when you heard the phrase octopus balls, did that make you think they were something that they are not?
Probably, I can't remember. I mean, it's been a long time.
Some people hear octopus balls and they're like, I didn't even know octopi had testicles.
Okay. I don't think that's what I thought.
Okay.
I maybe thought like octopus was like smushed into a ball and grilled or something.
Sure. I think that's another common misconception, is that it's just like a big ball of octopus. It's not that at all. Actually, by volume, very little of it is octopus.
Yeah, there's a decent little chunk inside, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So just to give you some basics, this is a signature street food of Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
They're grilled, bready little balls. They make them with a batter of eggs, wheat flour, and dashi, which is kind of a fish stock sort of thing. And as we said, there's just a little piece of octopus inside there. And then they top these balls with takoyaki sauce, mayonnaise, katsuobushi, which is fish flakes, and aonori, which is like powdered seaweed, basically. And they're tasty.
Yeah, these are the ones we were talking about in the intro that will burn your mouth off right away.
Be very careful, yes.
But But that's because they're grilling them right there, and they put them straight from the grill into your little cardboard boat or whatever you call that.
And that's how you know they're good.
Yeah,
they came right off the grill.
Yep.
I have actually heard, I just discovered this during my research for this episode, some places do actually put a whole baby octopus in there.
Wow.
I would be interested to try that. But I've never seen that. Literally never. You know, if you want to try takoyaki, don't be nervous that you're going to get a whole baby octopus. I think that's pretty rare.
Sure. Yeah. I think so too. This is one of the, I suppose, few on here that I have tried way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the biggest fan of octopus. It's a bit tough.
It depends how it's prepared. I've had some incredibly tender octopus, actually.
Okay. Well, I haven't. So I missed out on that. But I do think the textures play well. Like the hot, crispy batter on the outside with a little bit of the chewiness of the octopus on the inside and then all the sauces on top. It's a pretty delectable little treat.
Yeah, they're great. I feel like they're one of the more popular Japanese street foods to find outside of Japan, too. Like, they've been exported a lot of other places more than a lot of the other stuff that we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Extremely popular.
Another thing I want to note here, because this is going to come up again in this episode, that yaki, you might have heard that in things like teriyaki. That yaki just means grilled. So we're talking about all sorts of grilled stuff in this episode. And we grouped them together at the beginning. So there's going to be a lot of yakis. So just know yaki equals grilled.
Yes.
Paul, do you know anything about the history of takoyaki?
Just that it originated in Osaka.
I don't want to dwell too long on this because we're already 20 minutes in. But I did a bit of a deep dive on these just because I came across a little tidbit. And it was like one of those things where you find the end of a string and you just got to keep pulling on it, you know?
I was curious coming into this episode on how deep you'd go. I was like, is Jason going to have a full history on like all 20 of these dishes we're about to talk about?
Not all of them, but you know, especially when I first start my research, this was one of the first things I started looking into. And then I end up with like a full page about the first topic and I'm like, oh no, I need to.
Yeah, I better start cutting back a little bit.
Right. But I think this is interesting. Tell me if this is interesting. Okay, so the story starts in the Edo period in a city called Akashi in Hyogo Prefecture. You know Hyogo, right?
Is that south of Osaka?
West.
West, okay.
Hyogo is where Kobe is.
Sure.
Okay, so in this city, Akashi, they used to make this traditional decoration called Akashidama, which is made by hardening egg whites with saltpeter. But they didn't use the egg yolks in this decoration. So with all these extra yolks, they eventually started making these little eggy balls that they called tamagoyaki, grilled egg. Tamagoyaki means something different today. You'll hear that around. But so these balls that they made there, I guess they still make them, but they're now known as Akashiyaki, named after the city. And another interesting thing about this city is that they caught a lot of octopuses, however you want to say it. So they started putting octopus into these egg balls.
Okay.
So we're getting pretty close.
Sure.
To takoyaki, right? But with a much higher egg content and specifically using those yolks. The other weird thing about that, or different thing about that, is that they're eaten dipped in dashi.
Okay.
So they're kind of like soft compared to takoyaki. Okay, then in 1935 in Osaka, somebody decided, hey, let me add some other stuff to this batter here. We'll use a little less egg. Maybe I'll top it with this sauce, some mayonnaise, some katsuobushi, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll call this takoyaki.
Okay.
So there you got it. Takoyaki. So yeah, since it originated in Osaka, if you haven't tried it and you're going to Osaka, I would recommend trying it there. You know, get the original one, right?
Yep.
I had some at Dotonbori, right by the canal there. There are a bunch of takoyaki stands, or in the restaurants, a lot of those will serve takoyaki as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you have it in Japan?
I mean, I don't remember. It was my first trip in like 2008. I mean, probably Osaka would be my guess, but I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I mean, it is all over the place now. You don't have to be in Osaka
to
get it.
I do think it's interesting that so many foods originated, because food used to be so much more scarce than it is now. It's like, we have a bunch of octopus. What can we put this in? And they just kind of created new dishes and found what worked.
And they didn't used to have all the high-speed trains and the boat. Well, they had boats, but probably weren't as fast as modern boats. I don't know.
Right.
Food can just get around a lot easier these days.
Right.
So you can find, you know, local specialties further away than ever before.
Pre-refrigeration. You right. kind of like got to eat it pretty quick.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Paul, what's the next yaki on our list?
Yakitori.
Okay.
And these are grilled chicken skewers.
So if yaki means grilled, what does tori mean?
Bird, I believe.
Yeah. Niwa tori is a chicken specifically, but...
I know this because there's a sub-Hololive group called Holotori, and it's all the bird-based VTubers in it.
Wow, okay. Interesting.
So anyways... I mean, I knew about yakitori, and I knew it's incredibly prevalent. You can get it all over the place. But I was a little bit surprised by the incredible variety. So it's generally marinated in a soy-based sauce and grilled, but they use all different parts of the chicken. Like, you can get chicken breast or chicken thigh or gizzards or livers or just about any part of the chicken you might find at some of these different places.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's different sauces, too. Like, I think I've seen barbecue and different
really?
Types of things.
Barbecue?
Like, it's not
American
prevalent.
Barbecue sauce?
Yeah, it's not prevalent, but you get all sorts of different varieties out there. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Another note about yakitori is it's not always exclusively chicken. Like, if you go to a yakitori place, that word can refer to other types of meat, too. So they could have like a wide selection of skewers, including vegetables or mushrooms, things like that.
Yakitori mushrooms? What?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a umbrella term for skewered stuff.
I like it.
So from what I've seen, when I get yakitori, I feel like I'm usually offered two choices for like how I want it prepared.
Okay.
Because they got the little skewers on their charcoal grill, right? And then when they're heating them up, you know, to get them right to the perfect temperature to put them right in your hand, they'll ask, okay, do you want shio or do you want tare? Shio is salt. So they just sprinkle some salt on there. That's literally it. Or tare is a soy sauce-based glaze kind of thing. They'll like brush it on there or maybe dip it into a vat of this stuff.
What's your go-to?
I like it both ways.
Okay.
It depends on my mood, I think.
Okay.
It's also not uncommon to see negi mixed in there. Pieces of negi between the pieces of chicken. And negi is, it's related to green onion. It's just like kind of thicker and a little milder, I'd say. That can be really good too. I had one like that at Fushimi Inari after I spent an hour lost on the mountain.
Okay.
I was like...
Yeah, you were hungry and tired.
Yeah, and it was delicious. That's the best time to eat a yakitori, I think. Just go get lost on a mountain, and then once you find your way back down the mountain... Eat some yakitori. It'll be the best you've ever had. Another note is that yakitori is considered an excellent accompaniment to beer.
Yes, yes. Common bar food.
I mentioned the yatai in Fukuoka. I had yakitori there with beer.
Okay.
And it was great.
Nice.
Big glass of Asahi.
Sounds good.
It was.
Have you seen meatball yakitori? Kept seeing that was a thing in my research, but I can't remember ever actually seeing that in person.
Is it chicken meatballs?
I think so.
I feel like I might have seen it. I don't think I've ever had it.
Okay. Something to try next time.
Yeah. All right, Paul, ikayaki. We know yaki is grilled. What is ika?
Squid.
Grilled squid on a skewer.
Ika. It's almost like ink. Ink, squid.
Inka.
See where I'm going there?
I get it. Yeah, I can see the connection. Yeah, this one's pretty simple. You just take a squid, you stick it on a skewer, you grill it, dip it in soy sauce. There you go. Also popular in Osaka.
Not tried this one.
Neither have I, but I've seen it.
Not a squid guy, you know, ever was.
Next time I see this, I'm going to pick one up, I think. I'm curious.
Going to Japan for me the first time when I wasn't vegan was interesting. Because growing up right in the middle of the USA with like very little seafood here other than a few fish out of the lakes, and like my family didn't eat seafood really.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was new to me, and I was like, I don't know about some of this stuff, you know?
I feel like squid especially, that's probably one of the big things that you'll see in Japan that a lot of Americans are not familiar with at all.
I've had like the dried squid snack.
I was going to ask.
And I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I liked it the first time I tried it, but it's kind of grown on me.
Okay.
And my wife, Yia, is a fan. So once in a while, we'll just pick some up at the Asian market. They have all sorts of different flavors of that stuff, too. You know, you can get spicy ones. You can get salty ones or sweet ones.
Okay.
I don't know. I like it. And it's a nice snack that like doesn't go bad. You can kind of just keep it in your pantry or whatever and snack on it whenever you feel like it. Okay, Paul, this next one is misleading, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because taiyaki, if you just look at the word, yaki is grilled, as we know. Tai is a type of fish called sea bream. So you might think this is grilled sea bream, grilled fish. But it's not that at all.
Yeah, that's very misleading.
Yeah.
So taiyaki is fish-shaped pastries, almost like a pancake, stuffed with sweet red bean paste.
They can actually be filled with all sorts of things. The red bean paste is the most
traditional one. Yes.
These days, you'll find them filled with custard, cheese maybe, sweet potato, matcha, like a matcha cream sort of thing, chocolate.
Nutella.
Yeah.
This one is my biggest regret. I want to try one of these so bad.
But they're not vegan, are
they?
And
I never have. You could make it vegan, but I can't like find one vegan when I'm in Japan. Maybe someday I will at some vegan restaurant. But I wanted one of these the first time I was in Japan, and I just like didn't happen by a stand, or I didn't notice it or something. I just somehow I never got one.
Hmm.
And I'll regret it till my dying day, Jason.
So do you know for sure that like the batter is made with eggs or milk or something? Did you find
traditionally
that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's pancake like, it's a pastry.
Yeah. Or butter.
Butter. So yeah, it's sure. It's got dairy in there.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I might have to make one at home someday. Maybe I should buy a little fish pan.
Didn't we talk about a taiyaki mold kind of thing from
Bento & Co.?
Bento & Co.
I think they have one. Yeah, yeah. I never got around to ordering it because I think it said you needed an open, like a gas stove.
You can come over here.
I don't have a gas stove. Yeah,
I do now. Now for the first time ever. It's awesome, man. Right, I love having a gas stove.
I guess I'm getting you a taiyaki pan for your birthday.
Sounds good to me. But yeah, I guess we didn't really cover how they're made yet.
They're
like these metal molds. They're two halves, you know, each half of the fish. Each side, not the front and then the back, but the sides. And then you pour the batter in there, and then you stick your filling on there, and then you squish the two sides of the mold together, put it over fire, and there you go.
Yeah.
I hear they're especially popular in Asakusa in Tokyo, which is actually, coincidentally, the place where I first tried taiyaki.
How amazing was it?
It was amazing.
Ah!
Yeah, Paul, you're really missing
it. Ah!
I think I had a cheese one in Kawagoe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, try them all. You know, get them filled with all sorts of stuff. You won't regret it.
Moving on to another very popular one, Jason.
This is probably my favorite yaki.
Fair, fair. Yakisoba.
Sauteed noodles, basically. Yaki is grilled. Soba. If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you might know that soba is usually referring to buckwheat noodles. But in this case, soba is just talking about noodles in general. They're not specifically soba noodles. But they take these, I think they're normally just wheat noodles instead of buckwheat. Take the noodles, they saute them on a griddle type of thing with bits of meat and vegetables and sauce, and it's really delicious.
Yeah, I love fried noodles, man. They're so good.
This is one of these things that I make at home.
Yeah.
I get the packages of yakisoba.
I do too. I think pork is probably the most common meat topping. It seems to be very, very prevalent.
Yeah. Probably.
Some of the veggies they use, cabbage, onions, carrots. I like to use mushrooms myself.
Yeah, sure.
Some shiitake in there.
Yeah. It's often topped with things like mayonnaise. When I say mayonnaise in this episode, we're talking about Japanese mayonnaise specifically. I guess I didn't mention that that's a little bit different than American mayonnaise. Look for QP at your local Asian market and try it out, and you'll see why it's so much better than American mayonnaise. But okay, topped with mayonnaise, seaweed powder, that aonori stuff that I mentioned before, pickled ginger, just a little pinch of it on top is popular.
I see it occasionally with a fried egg on top too.
That sounds awesome. I got to start adding fried eggs to my yakisoba at home. Although, Paul, after all these years, sometimes my brain just, you know, hiccups a little bit. I was about to ask when was the last time you bought eggs, but of course you don't buy eggs. But I haven't bought eggs in months because of the ridiculous prices. I can't. Well, it's insane.
Don't forget that I work at a grocery store. I'm very well aware of the egg pricing situation.
Well, right. I just meant that it would have been a dumb question to ask you.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Did you stop buying eggs?
Yeah, if you would have asked it in that way, yes. Yeah.
Do you sell a lot less eggs now?
No.
People still buying, they're just paying their ridiculous prices?
Yep. You're the only one not buying eggs anymore.
$5 a dozen? No, thank you.
We sell like free range organic eggs. You don't even want to know how much they cost.
Like $10 a dozen?
Not quite, but almost.
Oh, man.
Did we talk about the sauce?
Not in detail, no.
Okay. I think most popular is, it's kind of like a soy Worcestershire. I struggle with that word.
Worcestershire. Yeah.
So it's a little bit sweet and a little bit smoky flavored almost, kind of. You get like that grill flavor from it.
I suppose.
Very good.
It is really good. When I buy the stuff at the market to make it home, they have the standard one, but then they also have a curry one. Have you tried that?
I haven't.
Oh, that one's pretty good, but my favorite actually is the shio one. It's just, you know, salt flavored.
Okay. I like the standard one. That little powder packet, and you just mix in a little water. Man, it's good.
It is really good. I also, yakisoba is kind of a greasy comfort food sort of thing, I guess. I like to mix in a little extra Japanese mayo just into the noodles, make them extra greasy and fatty and... Good stuff, man.
Okay. When I worked in Santa Monica way back in my California days, in the mall across the street, there was a place that literally just did yakisoba. And I would go there and it was cheap. For like $6, I could get like a veggie yakisoba.
Nice.
And they'd make it right there in like 3 minutes. And I'd be able to get back in 45 minutes on my lunch break.
Hmm.
I got that a lot.
That's cool. I used to, when I worked at a recording studio in LA, I would bring yakisoba a lot for lunch in my bento.
Ah, nice.
Actually, does this sound super name-droppy if I say I had a conversation with Bubba Sparks about my yakisoba? Because I was just eating it, and he was sitting next to me. He was like, what's that?
No, because I don't even remember who that is.
Oh, okay, good.
He was probably famous at some point, right?
Yeah.
You've worked with more famous people than that.
Probably the most innocuous name I could drop.
Yeah,
I guess.
So I'll say not name droppy. Okay. You could have gone higher on that.
Oh, last thing about yakisoba is that it's really popular festival food. You'll definitely see that if you attend a festival.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
The next one's another good one. Yakiimo. Yaki is grilled. What's an imo, Paul?
Sweet potato.
Well, technically, imo just refers to any potato, but if you hear somebody advertising yakiimo, they're talking about sweet potatoes usually.
Thanks for the correction.
No problem. You know how I like to
be
extremely pedantic.
No, that was good though. Yeah, roasted sweet potatoes. They sometimes grill them on hot stones, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I was going to point out too that they're often satsuma imo. You remember Satsuma, right?
Yeah, grown in the volcanic soil of Satsuma.
Yeah, around Kagoshima. They're famous for their sweet potatoes there. That's actually where I had one of these a couple trips ago.
I remember you getting that.
It was very tasty.
Yeah.
Very tasty. And you might think like grilled potato, oh, that's like a savory kind of thing. But these sweet potatoes are sweet enough that it's kind of like a little sweet treat.
Yes. I may be spoiled in my palate with all the disgusting food I eat. All the sugar and sauces and everything, but I like sweet potatoes, but like, man, I wish there was like something, like some sort of like sauce or
I was surprised
topping to go with these.
I was surprised you didn't even try one when I got that. Like, it's one of the rare vegan options, you know?
Yeah, I wasn't super hungry at that point.
You didn't even taste mine, did you?
No.
But, like, the...
Sometimes I get weirded out when you're, like, too insistent. Like, Paul, you gotta try my sweet potato. Try my sweet potato. And I'm just kind of like, nah.
I love introducing people to new, amazing foods that I very much enjoy. And honestly, Paul, it makes me very sad that there are so many foods that I can't introduce to you, you know, because of your eating preferences.
My affliction.
I wasn't going to go that far. But so it does make me a little disorder. Sad. It makes me sad when I find something vegan that's also delicious somehow, and then I offer that to you, you know, Paul, you got to try this, and you're like, meh.
Okay, I'll try to be better on that. I don't know. Maybe I'm like, you know, I grew up with two older brothers. I'm like distrusting when someone's too insistent on something. I'm like, what's the catch? what are you trying to get out of me here?
I wasn't like, Paul, open your mouth and close your eyes. Just trust me. Just trust me.
You sure you don't want to try it? It's really good. Japanese sweet potatoes are great, though.
Yeah.
They have a dark purple skin and then like a creamy, whitish, yellowish inside.
They're very good. And like the sugar in the sweet potato caramelizes, you know?
Yeah.
Like I feel like it makes them extra sweet.
And the skin gets a little crispy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're super
becoming really popular here. Like we sell a ton of Japanese sweet potatoes at work.
Really?
Yeah. More and more every year, I feel like.
Huh. What does the label say? Does it say Japanese sweet potato?
Yep.
Huh.
Yep.
I wonder how much that word Japanese on the sign like attracts people.
Maybe. You know? Some of the boxes when they come in from our supplier say Oriental sweet potatoes, but I'm like, that's not a good name.
No. That's funny.
They're very popular in winter too because they're so piping hot, right?
Well, they double as hand warmers,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, yeah. Warm your hand, warm your body as they go down.
Yeah. Another really fun thing about Yakiimo is the way people sell it sometimes. Have you heard about this?
What are you getting at here?
So sometimes you'll see like trucks going down the street and they'll have like a loudspeaker and somebody's singing Yakiimo.
Okay, yeah.
To advertise.
Yeah.
I don't know why none of the other street foods get a song, but it's pretty fun to hear. Like you can actually, if you go on YouTube and Google like Yakiimo song, you'll find a bunch of videos of trucks driving around Yakiimo and they have fun with it. It's like they play around, you know. Yakiimo. Yakiimo. Yakiimo.
It's going to be flashbacks to our last trip to Japan where we spent a couple days in Shibuya and those same trucks would drive around with the billboard blasting the advertisements.
Yeah.
And there was like a vegan perfume or something. Do you remember that one? It was going by. It was Japanese, vegan, drive-by.
I forgot it was vegan. I remember the perfume one, though.
Yeah.
That was loud.
Yeah.
We saw it all the time.
All the time. Man, he has small driving radius.
Yeah.
Because he was coming by every 5 minutes or something.
Yeah. How much is he, you know, affecting traffic? Like, those streets are busy.
Right. Half those street traffic is just cars driving in circles.
Mm-hmm. Next one I have not tried. But I very much like the Mexican version of this.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep, yep.
Although those aren't vegan either.
Nope.
Or wait, is this one? This would be vegan, right? Mm. Well, no, probably not most of the time because of the butter.
Right.
We're talking about Yaki Tomorokoshi, which is Japanese corn on the cob. And what makes it special is that it's grilled over an open flame. It's got that nice char on it, you know? And it's flavored with butter and soy sauce and mirin, maybe miso. Might see miso in there.
Yeah.
You might also get some mayo on top, maybe some garlic and chili powder.
Yeah, this one I'm okay with. We live in the middle of corn country. We got some of the best corn in the world here. I eat plenty of corn on the cob.
Do you? You make corn on the cob at home?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Now that I'm moving into a place that I can have a grill soon, I'll be eating a lot of it this year.
Yeah, I got to pick up a grill.
Although I should try a soy sauce glaze. I've never done that. I usually vegan butter and salt. It's pretty good.
Yeah, corn doesn't need a lot, you know? Corn's pretty good on its own.
It's so sweet
already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw that this is most commonly found in Tohoku, northeastern Honshu, but it can be found all over Japan, especially at summer festivals, because, of course, that is when corn is in season.
Yeah. Well, that's the last of the Yakis. We got some other savory dishes to talk about, though.
Yeah.
And this next one, I'm very curious to see if you've tried this. Taco Tamago, octopus egg.
I hadn't even heard about this until we started doing this research, and now I'm super interested. I want to seek this out and eat this because it involves one food that I really, really love, quail egg, and I like eating those baby octopi as well. You know, they're pretty tasty. So basically what this is, I mean, if you see it, it just looks like a baby octopus on a skewer, but there's a quail egg hidden inside that baby octopus. And then they're glazed with a sauce. And I want it.
Very unique dish.
Yeah. I wonder if I've seen these. I feel like I've seen little octopus on sticks, you know?
Right, right. It's one of those things where, like, I probably saw it and didn't know what it was.
Yeah. If somebody had told me there was a quail egg in there, I would have been like, okay, give me one of those.
Yeah. You'll have to try it on our next trip and report back in the trip recap.
Yeah. Man, I love quail eggs. You know, those have gotten expensive too. All the eggs.
They've always been expensive.
They used to be, you could get, I don't know, I guess it's kind of expensive for the size of them. They're
right.
Pretty small, but right. Like 99 cents for a dozen or something.
Oh, I don't recall ever seeing that.
Oh, they definitely used to be that cheap.
Okay.
But apparently this Taco Tamago originated at Nishiki Market in Kyoto, I saw.
Oh.
But now it's found all over Kansai.
Okay.
Yep. Paul, have you ever had karaage?
Yeah.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah. Can't go wrong with fried chicken.
Did you right? just have that on your first trip?
Yeah.
Where'd you have it? Do you remember?
No. Probably konbini.
Oh. I mean, sure. Konbini karaage is fine, but I feel like it's better as street food, you know, on the street from an actual stand that specializes in that kind of thing.
Sure.
I had some really good karaage in Otaru in Hokkaido. So tell us, Paul, what's special about Japanese fried chicken? How is it different from other types of fried chicken?
Probably the marinade. You know, it's marinated with mirin a lot and garlic, soy sauce.
Ginger, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Sake.
Coated in panko sometimes.
I don't feel like I've ever seen it coated in panko. I heard that they usually use something like some sort of starch, like corn starch or potato starch or something to make it extra crispy.
Okay, okay. Have you ever had it topped with mayo?
I don't think so.
Okay. I saw that was an option, apparently.
Mm. Another thing about it is, like, they kind of take steps to make it easy to eat as a street food, you know? It's not like you're holding on to a wing or whatever, getting your hands all greasy. It's boneless, and it's bite-sized. So you can, usually I feel like they give you a little, like, toothpick kind of thing to eat it with.
Yeah, yeah. Easy to eat.
Yeah. Can be found all over the place. Another place I got it is there's a stand selling it right outside the bamboo grove in Arashiyama in Kyoto. But if you go there, be careful because the roof of that stand, it's very low. And I totally bashed my head right into it. And it was very embarrassing and painful.
Oof.
Like it, you know, I got a lump from it.
Dang.
Yeah. So don't do that.
Double painful. The emotional damage and the physical damage.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was like right after I took it from the person, you know, it's like, oh, thank you very much.
Thank
I'm very
you,
excited
bam.
To eat this.
Oh!
Boom. And then I'm like, yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, are you okay? And you're not. But you're like, yeah, I'm fine.
Yep.
I'm fine.
Everything's fine.
And everyone's like, I don't think he's fine.
I totally didn't make it through that interaction without embarrassing myself. That always.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
You go to Japan and you're tall enough, you will hit your head a few times.
That's true. Yeah. If you're over like, I don't know, what, 5.5 feet or something? Like, just be careful. Just keep an eye out. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. Well, next is one of your favorites, Jason.
Okay, I'll take it from here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kobe beef. This has come up on the podcast before, of course. I've talked about, my mouth is watering already. From all the times that I booked like a real fancy, expensive dinner to have some super high-grade Kobe beef, oh, it's the best. And it's not uncommon to see Kobe beef skewers sold as street food. I think I've had this a couple times. I think I had it at the sumo tournament in Fukuoka. I also had some in Akihabara. There's a
I remember stand. You getting it there.
Yeah.
And are you talking about a skewer? Is it kind of like a long strip of like grilled beef? Skewered, or is it little chunks?
I think it's little chunks.
Yeah.
That's how I remember it. And it's generally going to be more expensive than, you know.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's my thing. I think I've only had this a couple times. Like I said, those two places, I wasn't impressed.
Wow.
Like, I feel like at those stands, when you're getting Kobe beef as street food, they're not giving you the best cuts. Like, I got some gristle on these skewers, all right?
Sure.
And if you go spend, I mean, of course, like you said, you get what you pay for. If you're dropping $150 for a dinner at a nice Kobe beef place, you're not getting any gristle. You're getting the perfect parts of the
And I
the
think
meat.
That's your problem, because you're doing that every time you go to Japan. And then like 2 days later, you're buying street Kobe beef
spoiled.
And you're like, it's not the same.
I just don't want to get stuff stuck in my teeth.
Yeah,
the gristle, man. Gristle is unforgivable. All
Unless
right.
Unless it comes with a toothpick.
A toothpick would have been nice.
Yeah.
But this is just my opinion. I'm just one person, but I say don't get Kobe beef as a street food. Or if you do, just like look really closely at what they're actually serving you, because I feel like a lot of these places will prey on tourists just using that name Kobe beef, and then they charge you a bunch of money
sure.
for not really that great of beef.
Right.
But I'm sure there are places that are selling really good Kobe beef on skewers too. I just haven't come across them personally, you know?
Okay. Fair warning there.
If you want real good Kobe beef, just do some research and find a good restaurant. You want a place that shows you the raw chunk of beef before you eat it, and you're going to look for all that just super amazing marbling with no like big strips of fat on the side. That's what you want.
Are you ready to move on to one of my favorites?
I think I'm done talking about Kobe beef, I guess.
All right. Gyoza. I love gyoza, Jason.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, I do. I eat it fairly regularly.
You make it at home?
I mean, I buy these like frozen bags of it that you can like fry up in 5 minutes, get them nice and crispy and tasty.
Okay, let me ask you this. Because you've seen like the places that serve gyoza, and it's got like this perfect little really light, crispy kind of web that's like holding all the gyoza together. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Have you ever been able to replicate that at home?
I've never really tried.
Okay.
I do them individually, but as long as you get nice and crispy, they're good.
They gotta be crispy. I feel like I've had soggy gyoza, and it's just...
Not good.
No.
Not good. So, gyoza, we're talking about stuffed dumplings?
Yeah, they're those little, like, crescent-shaped dumplings. They look like a little crescent moon,
yeah,
you know?
They're not too big. They're kind of, like, bite-sized.
Mm-hmm. They became super popular in Japan starting after World War II. When all that wheat flour was flooding into Japan because of those rice shortages. We talked about that in the ramen episode. That's also why ramen became so popular, all that wheat.
Yeah. And they can be steamed, but I'm a huge fan of the pan fried. Or even, I think, deep fried sometimes you can get them.
I would eat that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're often filled with some combination of minced meat, garlic, cabbage, veggies. I obviously go for the veggie ones.
There's a kind of a soy sauce-based dipping sauce, usually.
Yep. I usually do a little soy sauce and a little hot sauce. Very good. Serve it with some white rice is my preference, although that's not how you're going to get it on the street.
Sure. What was the city? The gyoza city.
Oh, north, just north of Tokyo.
Yeah, between Kyoto and Nikko.
Where that like first Shinkansen stop is.
Utsunomiya, right?
Yes, that's the one. They have like 300 gyoza shops.
Yeah, if you're like a real gyoza fanatic, go to Utsunomiya.
Yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah, we should stop there next time.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff there.
Yeah, they got that cave, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Next up, korokke or croquettes.
Croquette, korokke, yeah, pretty good.
It makes
pretty
sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Do you, you know, I'd heard that word, I think, before I'd heard of Japanese croquettes. I'd heard the word croquettes in English, but I'm not sure I knew what really that was. Like, do you feel like most Americans are familiar with croquettes as a concept?
That's a great question. I would guess no, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I learned about them from Japan. Like, I don't think it's something I've ever had in America.
Yeah. I don't think I've had it here either, unless I mean, I used to buy them and make them at home. Or I think I might have even made some from scratch one time. They're not hard to make.
I feel like you've made them for me before.
Yeah, very possible. They actually originated in France. And, you know, Japan, they like French food, and mm-hmm. they like twisting foods from other countries to their own tastes and whatever. So Japan's created their own version since croquettes were first introduced to the country in the late 1800s. Do you want to describe them, or should I?
Yeah, I could take it.
All right.
It's a deep-fried patty of mashed potatoes and chopped meat. And I believe this one is coated in panko often.
Yes, if definitely.
Not always.
Yep.
And then served with a dip, too. Maybe that some sort of Worcestershire sauce type dip.
Yep. There could be veggies in there, too. Potato meat and veggies. And you could also find vegetarian ones.
And vegan ones. I think I got these at the that vegan restaurant under the train tracks in Akihabara.
Yeah, yeah. I totally remember.
And they were amazing.
Yeah. You also had a wasabi croquette at Daiya Wasabi Farm, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I had two.
Yeah. Yeah, they're tasty. And like I said, super easy to make. You just like mash some potatoes, cook some meat, mix it together, coat it in breadcrumbs, deep fry it. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
They're good.
I got to start making these.
Yeah, I was just thinking, why don't I make these more often? Like, that's pretty easy.
Deep frying is a pain.
That's true. That's true.
I wonder how they do it in an air fryer. Probably wouldn't be quite the same. You could probably pan fry them, especially if you made them a little bit thin.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need like a whole pot of oil to deep fry things. You can just have like half an inch of oil or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just do it in a pan.
I should do it.
Yeah. So let's see, we're starting to get to, like, we're almost to sweet stuff, right? We've been talking about a lot of savory stuff, except those taiyaki, because of the yaki thing.
Yeah.
But this next one could be sweet or savory.
Sure.
We're talking about senbei, or rice crackers. Very popular and very traditional. It goes way back. They're these thin, usually round crackers made of baked or grilled rice. They're often flavored with things like soy sauce and mirin, very traditional flavors. But they can also be, like I said, sweet. You could see sugar a lot of the time, sesame seeds. Other savory things might be like seaweed or shrimp could be involved.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really good one on our last trip at Naraijuku, remember? I mean, you remember Naraijuku at least, the traditional street, the post town that we walked through. Beautiful place, really incredible place. And I got this little senbei. It was like a sugary senbei with walnut.
Ooh.
It was very tasty.
That sounds good.
Yep. I also remember getting some on the road leading up to Kiyomizu-dera in Kyoto. But you can find, I mean, you'll see senbei all over the place.
I mean, I think senbei, isn't that what you buy to feed to the deer in Nara?
Yeah.
But like less flavor, you know, probably less salt and sugar.
Yeah,
in
those ones are a bit different from the ones usually made for human consumption, but you could eat those deer crackers. They're edible.
Like, yeah.
They're not going to poison you or anything.
Yeah.
I don't know why I never tried one. I'm kind of just curious what they taste like now.
Probably not great.
I don't know. We'll see.
I feel like animals other than humans don't really sweat. So they can't take the salt intake like we do. So their food tastes super bland to us.
Mm.
You can't overload a deer with salt.
Okay.
So we'd probably get it and be like, yeah, it's a little bland.
What about there are all those animals that like salt licks and stuff?
I think it's because they get zero salt in their diet. You know, if you're eating leaves for like 99% of your food, they need a little salt.
Well, then why don't we give the deer salt?
There probably is a tiny bit of salt. It's just not human level salt.
So which is it, Paul? Do the deer need no salt or do they need a little bit of salt?
Less salt than humans.
We need to call up a deer doctor here. Get the details. Anyway, you got anything else to say about rice crackers? I have some history.
Okay.
Rice crackers go back over 2,000 years to ancient China. They came to Japan around the Asuka period, which was around 500 to 700 CE, and they evolved into basically modern senbei around the Edo period, 16 to 1800s.
Rice crackers just make so much sense
because,
you know, how do you make rice last? Like even dry rice only lasts so long. Eventually you have to cook it and turn it into something.
Yep.
And then a cracker would extend that life for you.
It does make a lot of sense. I mean, you got all that rice. It's a staple food. You're going to figure out all the different ways to make things out of it.
Yep. Time for sweets now?
We're solidly into sweets now.
Let's do it. You can start with soft cream.
Softo cream.
Softo cream. I love it. Soft serve ice cream, right?
Yep, that's what they call it in Japan, and this one is ubiquitous. I mean, pretty much every
Everywhere.
Touristy place, you're going to see the soft cream.
What makes it so unique in Japan is all the regional flavors.
I love it.
They go nuts on these flavors. I've seen you eat so many different kinds of this.
Every time I see a new flavor, I got to eat it.
I feel like the one that made me the most jealous was the sake flavor. I really wanted to try that one.
It was really good. It tasted like sake.
But you've had the gold leaf wrapped.
That was really good. Yep.
What are some of the other ones you've indulged?
Miso ice cream was super good.
You got that at the miso place last time, right? The miso factory?
In Matsumoto.
Yeah.
Yep. Black sesame ice cream is really cool. I had that black ice cream. It was like charcoal ice cream.
In Hakone?
Yep.
Charcoal ice cream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seaweed flavor.
I haven't had that. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I got to look for that one.
Squid ink.
Mm.
A big squid ink ice cream.
Very interesting. I wonder, I've had squid ink noodles, but I don't feel like the ink, I don't feel like it really has a flavor. I feel like it's mostly used for coloring.
Yeah.
But I mean, what you'll see everywhere, probably the most common flavor besides vanilla, is the matcha ice cream.
Of course. Right? Yeah.
And I don't know. Commonly, like, they'll have the options, vanilla or matcha or a mix of the two, the twist or whatever they call it, swirl. But have you seen the places where they actually have like different grades of matcha ice cream?
No.
I've seen places, and I don't know if it's necessarily the soft cream like this or if it's actually like ice cream that they're scooping out of a tub, but some places they'll have like a range of matcha ice creams that use different amounts of matcha, like different concentrations. So you can go for like the really sweet stuff with just a little matcha flavor, or you can go for like the really deep, super dark green matcha that's, you know, like 90% matcha.
I want to try that.
Me too. I haven't had it, but I really want to try that. Actually, when we were in Asakusa, there was a specific place that had a ton of matcha ice cream, I think, that I wanted to go to, and we didn't make it there.
We didn't have a ton of time there.
Yeah, yeah.
You had wasabi ice cream at the wasabi farm, right?
Oh, man, I can't believe I forgot about that. But yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, wasabi, like real fresh ground wasabi mixed with ice cream.
And did it come with a little scoop of actual wasabi on the side too that you could dip into?
It's awesome. It's so awesome. You should try it. And if you don't, you know, if you don't want to go all the way to Japan to Daiyo Wasabi Farm or wherever to try that, just get some wasabi at your Asian market nearby and mix it with some vanilla ice cream and just try it out. It's a really cool combination, I think. The spiciness with the sweet, cool cream. It's just really good.
Another one that caught my eye that I don't recall seeing is yuba ice cream.
Yuba that, flavored, or is that, there yuba in it?
I think there's yuba in it, but it's like, I don't think it's like chewy or whatever. We're talking about that tofu skin residue type of thing that's very common in Nikko.
So it's like smooth.
It's got the flavor.
Ice cream is interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I would love to try that. That sounds really good. I wanted to point out the gold ice cream you mentioned just because it's a fun little novelty. That's in Kanazawa. You'll see that all over the place because Kanazawa produces a ton of gold leaf. Like historically, they've been the main producer of gold leaf for the whole country. So they have this thing where you can get an ice cream cone that's completely wrapped up in gold leaf. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. We could go on and on with flavors, but I think we should leave it there.
You get the idea.
Yeah. Ooh, next ones I know you like.
Yeah.
Kakigori.
Very popular street food in summer. It's basically sweetened flavored shaved ice. It's really awesome. Like, it's, if you've had shaved ice in America and you're thinking, I don't need to try the Japanese version, I've had that here. Well, you still need to try the Japanese version because it's better. It just is, okay? Like, the ice is shaved way thinner somehow. It's like, it's got a different texture, and it retains the flavoring better. Like, it doesn't just pool at the bottom. I feel like a lot of times in the U.S., you get shaved ice, and it's like, okay, this just tastes like ice now. And then you get to the bottom and that's where all the sugar and syrup is like,
yeah,
you know, settled.
Yeah. They give a couple squirts of syrup that just soak right through.
Yeah. Like. Oh, also in Japan, sometimes it has like condensed milk in there, which does a really weird thing to the ice. Like it turns it into kind of a, almost like ice cream kind of texture.
Yeah, it almost like congeals it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like the texture is better and the flavor is more evenly distributed in the Japanese version of this.
Yeah, and sometimes they get fancy and they might top it with fruit or mochi bites.
Especially in Kagoshima, they have a special,
the one you got there looked really good.
It was so good, man. Yeah. It was so good. Every bite was so flavorful. It was great. Got a little history here, if you're interested.
Yeah.
Kakigori goes way back to around the 11th century. Very traditional treat. Was originally, of course, a high-class thing because not everybody had access to ice. But in the 1800s, ice-making machines brought it to the masses. And these days, there's even a Kakigori Day, the 25th of July.
What?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah. Makes sense, being pretty much the hottest time of the year.
It's so hot in Japan.
Yep. If I were there in July, I'd be just drowning myself in Kakigori.
Next up, we got dango.
More balls.
Yeah, I like dango.
Me too.
They're glutinous rice flour balls served on a skewer, and they're grilled often over charcoal to give it a little bit of that grill flavor.
They don't have to be grilled.
They don't have to be.
I feel like, I'm just kind of making this up, but from what I've seen, I feel like they're most often grilled if they're coated in something savory, and if they're sweet, they might not be grilled.
That makes sense.
Well, you know, let me take that back. They can be sweet and grilled too. The mitarashi dango is often grilled. But so these balls, they're similar to mochi, right? Glutinous rice origins. But they're actually made from rice flour instead of pounded rice.
Yeah.
Although I think in the mochi episode, we talked about how there's a little bit more of an overlap these days.
Yeah.
Like the line between dango and mochi, the line between what's made with the actual rice and what's made from rice flour, it's kind of blurred a lot of the time.
They're getting really good at mass producing it with the rice flour, making it taste really good.
Yeah. But they, if they're not cooked over a flame, so they have a little bit of char on them, they could also be cooked in hot water. Keep them all soft and kind of sticky.
Okay. I prefer the char.
I like them both ways.
And you get the, I love them with the soy sauce that's a little bit sweet. Like that sweet, salty flavor.
That would be mitarashi dango, I believe you're talking about.
That's my go-to.
So I got a little list of types of dango here and details about them.
Okay.
Or do you want to hear history first?
History first.
I have one sentence about history.
Okay.
Dango came about in the 12th century, and they're commonly served at tea ceremonies.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, so types of dango. There's the mitarashi dango. It originated in Kyoto, and those ones are covered in a thick, sweet, sticky syrup made from soy sauce, sugar, and starch.
Mm.
So you're a big fan of those?
Yeah, I like them.
The first time you ever had that or that type of thing, do you feel like it weirded you out at all, the idea of a sweet soy sauce thing? Because I feel like most Americans have only had soy sauce in like savory contexts. You know what I mean?
I'd say not really. Like even teriyaki sauce has a bit of sweetness to it.
I guess that's true.
It's not too unusual.
All right.
And I have a sweet tooth, so I liked it.
Okay.
The flavor has grown on me a bit over the years. I feel like I like it more now than maybe the first time I tried it.
Sure. I think I'm a little more fond of another popular type, which is hanami dango, popular in spring. Of course, hanami means flower viewing. We're talking about looking at the cherry blossoms that bloom in spring. This type is also called sanshoku dango because you get three balls on a stick and they're each a different color.
Oh, yeah.
You know these, right?
I've seen these.
What are the three colors?
White, pink, and I don't remember the third.
Green,
yeah.
The pink represents the cherry blossoms. The white is the remaining snow because it's like spring, right? And then the green is the new grass sprouting up.
Okay, I like it.
Symbolism. Tasty symbolism. Those are probably the most common ones that you're likely to see, but there are a bunch of other ones. We could really do a whole episode specifically about dango if we wanted. There's cha dango, which is flavored with matcha. Cha, it's tea, right? There's goma dango.
Yeah, that's my, you know I like these.
Me too.
So these are filled with sweet red bean paste or sometimes even sesame paste.
Mm.
And they're covered in sesame seeds and deep fried.
I feel like they could also be made with like ground sesame seeds.
Like in the dough?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're just kind of like gray balls.
Yeah, you get more maybe, of that sesame flavor.
I feel like
it's definitely chewy
that.
Though. Like there's definitely some rice in there.
It's not all sesame.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think I had that in Hakone.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've looked into these a bit because I like them so much. I think they originated in China, eventually made their way to Japan.
Another popular one that I like is Kinako Dango. Kinako is roasted soybean flour.
Mm.
It's good. Popular in desserts, that flour.
Yeah, you kind of coat it with the roasted soybean flour.
Yep. Let me look at my pics from last trip. I'm sure I have a picture of that Goma Dango in Hakone. One sec.
Sure. I always grab it when I see it.
Yeah, here we go. I don't know exactly how they make it. I would guess it's just, like I said, rice mixed with the ground up black sesame seeds. But here, Paul, take a look at this.
Huh, wow.
And they even have the different types. Like they have a mitarashi variety of that. So it's like the black sesame balls, but then they're coated in that sweet soy sauce glaze.
Yeah. Looks good.
Yeah, it was good. I had a different glaze, though. I got the walnut sweet miso glaze on a black sesame dango.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, it was real good.
I gotta go to Hakone. Although, I see like black food from Hakone, and I'm like, ash? Charcoal? Probably not on those, though, because it's black sesame.
Yep. We also did a Cooking with PB&J episode where we made shiratama dango. You remember that?
Yeah.
Those ones weren't on skewers, and they weren't perfectly round, but they were pretty tasty, I thought.
Yeah, definitely.
And those are really easy to make. If you're interested, and you haven't heard of the Cooking with PB&J stuff, those are videos that are available on our Patreon. This is our little cooking series. We try out making little different Japanese foods at home. It's pretty fun.
I'm excited to do a few more of those. Those are always fun.
Yeah.
Because we get to eat it after we're done.
That's always fun.
Got any more dango for us?
Well, I was just going to say, like, they're all over the place. You'll see them everywhere. So keep an eye out if you're traveling around Japan and try as many as you can, I would recommend. You could also check convenience stores. I've definitely seen a lot of dango in convenience stores, especially the mitarashi dango, if you're just curious what it's like. But the best ones are going to be from street food vendors, probably.
Yeah.
They're fresh and hot.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So crepes are very popular in Japan.
You mean crepes?
No, crepes.
They're originally French, and in France, there's an accent grave over the E, which means they're crepes.
In France.
Because I have to be pedantic.
You know? Yeah, sure. I will never call them that ever. Unless maybe I go to France, then I'll try.
They're not quite crepes in Japan either. They're not going to call them that.
No, but like, they're here, and I call them crepes.
Okay. You want to be an uncultured American, I suppose.
Hey, every culture takes words and makes them their own.
But we're not talking about American crepes.
Okay, well, how is it pronounced in Japan?
I don't know. I assume it's like crepe or something.
I thought you knew. You were correcting me crepe. Here. So anyways, what are we talking about here? In case anyone doesn't know what a crepe is.
Crepes, because Japan is pretty into French cuisine, and that's where it came from. You know, it's another one of those things that they took and tweaked a little bit. So French crepes, if I can start there.
Sure, why not?
French crepes, they're basically like super thin pancakes, right? They can be filled with sweet or savory ingredients, usually served on a plate, and they're relatively flat. The French version I'm talking, remember? Like the crepe is kind of folded over the ingredients. That's the way I've seen them. I've been to France, but I didn't eat a crepe there, I don't believe. But when I lived in Boston, there was a great little French crepe shop in Cambridge that mostly did savory crepes. They weren't like the sweet ones with all the fruit and whipped cream or whatever. it was like a lunch crepe. Like you'd get meat and cheese and stuff in there, and they were really tasty. But that's French crepes. Japan tweaks things. Japanese crepes are mostly sweet.
After hearing you say crepe 20 times in a row, I regret letting you be the one to describe these. But go on, no, since you're already...
I can pass it on to you now. You can finish it up here. Crepes.
Yeah, with the crepes. I think the biggest difference in Japan is that they fold it over a bunch and kind of put it in a little piece of wax paper for you so you can hold it in your hand.
Well, I was thinking the Japanese version is usually like more of a cone than like a flat triangle.
Well, I feel like that's because they fold it over. Like they make it flat.
Well, they fold it over, but they like roll it up so it's like easily held in your hand.
In the middle. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They're more three-dimensional.
Yeah.
The stuffings are all kind of in there. And it's like so full of stuff that they'll sometimes give you like a fork or a spoon so you can dig stuff out of there.
Yeah. And like anything, Japan goes wild with the flavors. You know, you get the strawberries and cream and the chocolate and all that nice stuff. But there's ham and cheese, tuna salad crepes. I thought that was a good one.
I think the sweet ones are more
most
common.
Popular, yeah.
And
yeah.
Like ice cream, you'd often find
cheesecake.
In there too. Sure, yeah.
So I think they're still really popular in Harajuku.
Yes.
But I feel like when I was first getting into anime and manga, like crepes were like the go-to, like trendy high school kids are like stopping to get a crepe.
Hmm. I wonder if that's why there are so many of them in Harajuku, because that is so connected with youth culture. You know?
Yeah. So I guess still popular with the kids.
Sure.
But they're sweet and delicious, so I get it.
Yeah. Have you had one of these in Japan?
Not that I recall.
I don't think I have. But yeah, Takeshita Street in Harajuku, you're going to find a bunch of famous crepe shops. Or maybe there's one specific one that's more famous than the others. I don't know. But if you want a crepe, you can definitely find them there. Or if you want a crepe, they're probably there too.
There you go. I can't get over the crepe thing.
I took French in school for a long time. I can't say crepe. It feels wrong.
My argument is just that every language takes over words. You know, like in Japan, they take American words.
So you're saying I sound like totally pretentious, like somebody that's like,
you know, like, I forget, how do you say computer in Japan? Like, computo or
computa,
yeah,
or a pasokon.
Yeah, you'd be the guy that was just like computer every time instead of saying it the Japanese way. And it's like, that's a real word in Japan now.
Yeah,
terebi, television. You know, terebi. If you were like television every single time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe I'm the one with the problem.
I mean, I feel like this kind of thing comes up a lot in the podcast where it's like, well, this is a word in Japanese, but it's also a word in English. Do I say it the English way or do I say it the Japanese way and risk sounding pretentious and weird, you know, for insisting?
Yeah, but you're saying it the French way.
I know.
In the context of this podcast, I feel like Japanese or English would be okay.
And throughout the course of this conversation, I've realized that that's a weird choice to go with the French pronunciation.
I'm just defensive because I say a lot of words wrong, and you correct me.
I understand. I'm sorry, Paul, if you feel like I attack you for the words or pronunciation that you use.
No, it's my fault for being wrong. That's just my defense mechanism.
I'm glad you agree.
Because you are wrong all the time.
Your words, not mine.
Anyways, anything else on crepes?
Nothing. Okay, I'm done.
Let's move on. Okay. To Choco Bananas. This one's pretty straightforward.
Really popular festival food. You'll probably see this at like every festival.
And they're absolutely delicious.
Have you had a lot of these?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think we sell these at work.
Vegan ones?
Yeah, dark chocolate.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Frozen banana, dipped in melted chocolate, put it on a stick.
But
it's
of course,
amazing.
Japan, you know, they go all out. It's not just a frozen banana dipped in chocolate on a stick. They got to cover it in sprinkles, nuts, perhaps.
I love the crushed nuts.
I feel like they'll have all sorts of different colors, too. White chocolate, pink chocolate.
Yeah.
All sorts of stuff.
Do you remember getting like the dipped soft serve cones when you were a kid?
Yeah.
And they'd like sprinkle nuts on those.
What happened to those?
Do you have to go to Dairy Queen to get that or something? Like, I don't go to Dairy
Queen. Maybe. they must still sell. Did you ever do that at home? Like they sell the chocolate shell kind of thing.
No, never. And it's like hard. And you like put it on top?
It hardens when it touches the ice cream.
Oh.
It's like the temperature of the ice cream hardens it.
I've never seen that.
It exists. And I don't know why I have this memory. This must have happened when I was a little kid. I think I bought some of that thinking, oh, I'll make like a chocolate shell on something that's not ice cream. And that's how I learned, oh, it has to be really cold for it to harden.
Yeah.
Because I failed miserably. Yeah.
It just melted all over everything.
Yeah. Yeah, Yi and I had one of these chocolate bananas in Kawagoe when we stumbled across a festival. Kind of funny, actually. Yi and I went in 2015, and we stopped in Kawagoe, and we got to this festival right as they were setting up. And then Paul, you and I went the very next year in 2016. We went to Kawagoe. We stumbled across the exact same festival when they were setting up. And it was totally coincidental. Like, we didn't plan out the time that we were going to this temple or anything.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do. Kawagoe is pretty cool, man.
It is.
That was good.
It was a good time. All right, Paul, let's talk boba. More balls.
Tapioca balls.
Yeah.
In sweet tea, usually.
Sweet milk tea.
Mm.
It's like tea and then sweetened with condensed milk. And they got tapioca balls at the bottom. And then you get this really thick straw so that you can suck up the tapioca balls. So you got a nice little thing to chew on while you're enjoying your milk tea. You've probably seen it. It's popular all over the world now.
Yeah.
And it's actually not, it's not like originally from Japan. I think it originated in Taiwan.
Somewhere Southeast Asia, I think. But you get your Japanese flavors, you know, like matcha. It's going to be pretty popular.
Sure.
They like melon flavored stuff in Japan.
Yeah.
So you might find that.
Yeah. You don't have to go, you know, well, I was going to say you don't need to go to Asia, which is obvious because I already said that it's, you know, all over the world, but you don't even need to go to a boba shop, really.
Yeah.
You can order flavored powder. I did that and it's awesome. And you can, you know, save some money that way. And I got a, it just reminded me the melon thing because I got some melon flavored powder and it was pretty good.
Ah, nice. Nice. Yep.
Anything else to say about boba?
That's all I got, boba. I think people know boba.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's not a ton to say about it.
I added one to the list here. Because I found this recently, candied fruit.
Oh,
and I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So it's basically like strawberries or grapes on a stick. And then you dip it in syrup, sugar syrup, and let it harden. So you get a crunchy coat of syrup on top of your already sweet food. And for someone with a sweet tooth like me, the sweet on sweet with the crispy texture and then the juicy fruit underneath, very good.
So this makes me think of when we were in Kobe and in Chinatown, you had some candied cherries on a stick.
That
was
super
good.
Yeah.
Did you look into these? I wasn't sure if it was like a Chinatown thing. It was more of a Chinese street food or if it's common in other parts of Japan. Do you know?
I've seen a couple other places. I think I saw it in Inuyama on our last trip.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's tasty.
Yep. I think that's our last one, which I think that was enough.
Probably.
Even though there's way more options out there.
We never said we would cover every single street food in the whole country.
No, no.
We didn't commit to that. We would never commit to that.
We reserve the right to make a street food part two episode at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
We got one last topic to cover here. Where are the best places to find street food?
Well, we already mentioned touristy streets in general.
Yep.
Takeshita Street in Harajuku. If you're in Tokyo, that's a good place to go. They're going to have all sorts of street food. In Osaka, Dotonbori, tons of street food.
Like Akihabara, you can find some stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, really, if you're going to a real busy, touristy kind of street, there's probably going to be some food that you can buy on that street.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned also streets leading up to castles or major temples or shrines.
Yep.
They're kind of a subcategory of popular touristy streets, right?
And we mentioned Matsuri. I kind of blew all this in the intro. My bad.
That's all right. I was just going to mention, just in case people are near these places and curious, the street up to Kiyomizu-dera in Kyoto. We had a bunch of street food there. Sensoji's Nakamise in Asakusa in Tokyo. Tons and tons of street food. In Uji, remember, Paul, walking up to Byodoin. If you like green tea, Uji is known for making a whole lot of excellent green tea.
Green tea, everything.
On that street, yeah, like tons of street food that all is infused with green tea. It's great. Inuyama, we mentioned. Takayama's old town area had a bunch of street food.
Yep.
Also, major post towns on the Nakasendo. We mentioned that too. Naraijuku or in Magome, did they have street food?
Magome's much smaller. I don't recall much.
Sleepier. But yeah, festivals, Matsuri. I think I kind of said this at the intro too. That's like the most reliable place to find
street food. That's ground zero for street food. And you could find some like pretty wild local specialties sometimes there that we maybe didn't cover in this episode.
Sure. And that's also a great thing to seek out because they happen all over the place at all times of year. Like no matter when you're going to Japan, if you Google around a little bit, you can probably find a Matsuri happening near where you're going to be.
Yeah.
I've stumbled across Matsuri that I didn't even hear about. I just like started seeing food stands and it's like, oh, it looks like a Matsuri to me.
Yep.
Another good place to find street food is fish markets.
Oh, yeah.
Tsukiji in Tokyo used to be the biggest fish market in Japan. The inner market has since moved to Toyosu, just a little further along the bay. But Tsukiji still has the outer market, which is going to have a lot of street food and restaurants. Nishiki Market in Kyoto will have street food. Kuromon Market in Osaka will have street food. Whatever city you're in, if it's a decent-sized city and it has a place with market in the name, you'll probably find some street food there.
Yes.
And now let's talk about Fukuoka, because they have kind of a... They're a little bit famous for a special type of street food they have there, right?
Yeah. Their yatai, which I think you might have mentioned earlier.
I did, with the yakitori.
Yeah. These are small mobile food carts, often made out of wood, that they bring out onto the street and open up in the evening, and then stay open very late. And they're really cool because it's like five or six seats with a little ledge and like an awning over you, and that's it. And they just make it right there for you, give it to you. It's open late, so it's hit the bar, stop at the yatai on the way home, get some greasy food.
Oh, man. I'm reminiscing now because I had the greatest day in Fukuoka. I spent all day at the sumo tournament.
Yeah.
And I had like great food from the food trucks right outside the sumo tournament. And I got a bento at the sumo tournament. And then after the sumo tournament, I went to Nakasu and had some food at one of the yatai. And then I walked across the canal to get to Canal City.
Ooh.
And I hung out at this mall, like one of the most mind-blowing malls I've ever been to. This was a great day. So Nakasu is one of the places where these yatai congregate in Fukuoka. It's a little island in the river. I might have just called it a canal. I think it's an actual river. But it's like a little island just covered in these little pop-up bars. It's just a really cool atmosphere. You can look out at the water and stuff.
Yeah, they serve alcohol.
Yes, they do. They do. I can confirm that.
I kind of deep dove into yatai, and I think I'll save a bit of it because I think we're due for a Fukuoka. I think we're due for a Fukuoka. Fukuoka episode at some point.
We should, yes.
Yeah, so that'll be coming at some point. So I won't go too crazy, but I saw that they were much more popular in the Meiji era and in the early post-World War II era, you know, after kind of the infrastructure got destroyed. But then regulations came in and kind of made it way harder for them to stay in business. They stopped giving out new licenses. Okay. But I thought it was really interesting that a lot of Japanese chain restaurants started as yatai post-World War II and eventually moved into storefronts and grew from there.
That is really interesting.
Another interesting thing is there's some loose ties to Yakuza because they operate so late, like into 2 to 4 a.m. range. And they're not run by the Yakuza, but I saw that they can be used kind of to try to advertise their sex workers and find clientele at these places late at night because it's kind of where people are at night.
Interesting.
So you might, if you go there late enough, you might see a Yakuza hanging around somewhere.
Had not heard that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'll save the rest for Fukuoka. Ah, I said it right.
Well done.
Yes. It's been a long episode.
Yeah. So I mentioned Nakasu, that little island. There are a couple other spots that are known for yatai around the city. So,
yep.
You can
Fukuoka is pretty much the only place you can go to really find them these days.
The only place that's well known for it, at least.
Yeah.
And another thing, the last place I have that I was going to mention that you could find street food, if you're interested, you could seek out a street food tour. Those exist.
Okay.
There are businesses that'll bring you around to areas to try a bunch of street food. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really know exactly what they're like. Like, how much food can you really eat all at once? How long is this tour? You know what I'm saying?
I've never even done a bar crawl or anything.
Or maybe you get a group together, and then it's like, okay, here's a thing. Everybody take like a little tiny bite of it, and then we'll go move on. And then you can try like 100 things without getting full. You know? I don't know. I'm just guessing.
I don't do enough tours. I'm too into like planning everything myself, and I want to control every minute of it. But, you know, the few I've done have been great.
Yeah.
You know, the Mount Fuji one and the ice caves was fantastic. Like,
that was probably
better than if we would have just went there on our own.
Yeah. I've never had a bad experience with a tour. I don't know why we haven't booked more of those. I mean, it's cheaper to book
it ourselves.
To do things yourself usually saves some money, but you can definitely learn some interesting things that you wouldn't have otherwise if you take a tour.
Maybe I need to change my mentality. You know, until a few years ago, I was pretty broke most of the time, you know, and I was always trying to go on the cheap. Or maybe I'm just doing the math like, well, if I spend less, I can go back to Japan sooner.
Yeah, that works. A lot of considerations there.
Yep. I actually got one more thing before you go. I was trying to surprise you, but it didn't really work because I needed to borrow your freezer. But I figured after talking about all this food, we'd be hungry.
Sure.
And I was like, what street food-ish thing can I bring over? And none of the hot food really seemed to work. So I brought ice cream bars.
Nice.
Because it has been super hot lately.
It really has.
So once we wrap this up, we can go upstairs and enjoy some salted cashew caramel chocolate dipped ice cream bars.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Very thoughtful. I was going to wrap this up by asking you, what's your favorite street food that you've ever had?
Just on the spot.
Bringing it on you.
I mean,
go back, look through the list.
I know. I don't know if I've ever had gyoza as a street food. You know, I've had it in a lot of restaurants, but I do love gyoza. But I might go with the my new favorite, goma dango.
Oh.
I really love those. The sesame fried dango.
Those are really good.
They're really good.
Yeah.
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 What about you?
Ah, I knew you were going
to
turn it back on me. And now I'm looking at the list like, oh, wait, what is my answer?
Next year, it'll be the quail egg octopus.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. I was just talking about quail eggs earlier today, actually, and how expensive those cans of quail eggs are. Ah, man. I mean, honestly, I don't know. Looking at the list, this feels like it shouldn't really be, like, this feels like an easy way out or something, but I really love boba, you know? Boba's great. If you get a good boba place.
Okay.
I actually went with your brother to a new boba place recently that I was like, This ain't quite it.
Uh-oh.
I feel like some places, I've been to multiple places where it feels like they're skimping out on the flavored powder because it's cheaper. They're just trying to save money, but it makes a worse product.
Terrible.
And that means I will never go back there, so they're really not making more money that way.
How are they making money? They're selling a glass of milk tea for like $7.
I know. But if they scare away all their customers because they don't make a good product, you're not going to last.
Yep.
But can I set boba aside? And because I just.
Yeah,
that
answer surprised me. How about some real food?
Maybe it's just because boba is the one that I have the most often because it's available here.
Sure.
But
if you were in Japan, what would you go get
Japan,
first?
Oh, man. You know what I just thought of that we didn't even talk about
what?
In this episode? In Inuyama, I had that fish.
Oh,
the grilled fish on a stick.
The whole fish on a stick.
That was amazing. I think I'm going to say that was my best street food that I had.
Okay.
It was really, really good.
Had an eyeballs and tail and all.
They just take the whole fish and they kind of make it curve, so it looks like it's swimming in the river as the point, and then they stick the skewer through it, sprinkle some like salt, but like the big grain salt, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then they grill that over fire. Really amazing. If you see that stuff, give it a try. If you're not too freaked out by the idea of eating, you know, an entire fish. They're small enough fish that it's not like you're not crunching through big bones or anything.
Okay.
It's just super good.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's probably enough, huh?
Yeah, I think that's good. Good episode.
All right. Me too. I had fun. But before we go, we should thank our Shogun level patrons. Kevin Harris, Michael Morris, Brady K, Jack, Tori, Shaked Rosenthal, Pamela Arola, Kevin Phillips, Kelly Ardong, Dennis Pearson. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
If you're interested in seeing a picture of that just incredibly adorable tanuki that Paul got for me, go check us out on Instagram. I just made a post about it. Did you see, Paul?
I did.
People liked it.
Yeah, it's adorable. He made a really good picture, too.
He's cute. Well, I had to get it from the angle where he looks like he's looking right into the camera, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, on Instagram, we are at SJP Podcast, and there'll be more fun stuff there in the future. Or you can scroll back through the hundreds of posts that I've made already. Paul, what are we talking about next time?
Our next episode is going to be on Kinkakuji and Ginkakuji.
The Golden Pavilion and the Silver Pavilion.
Yep.
Only one of which is actually covered in the metal in its name.
Oh, you spoiled everything,
Jason. I didn't say which one. They'll be in suspense until next time, wondering, is there one covered in gold or one covered in silver?
Two of the most famous temples in Kyoto.
Yes. And between the two of us, we've been to both of them.
I've been to both.
Yeah. I've only been to one.
One of the very few things that I've been to that you haven't.
I'll get there eventually. I'm more interested now that I know, because, you know, people always told me that it was just the pavilion that was interesting, but there's more interesting stuff.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.